It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday News. Stay tuned about 12:30 seconds or so for the update from the Kodiak Emergency Services Director. After that, we'll have local and statewide news. 45 degrees in Kodiak right now, partly sunny skies. We're looking for partly cloudy skies tonight and mostly sunny skies tomorrow. Standing by for the update from the Emergency Services Director.
March 25th, 2021. Thank you for joining today. My name is Mike Twenge, the Kodiak Area Emergency Services Director. I don't work alone. Kodiak has an engaged staff at the Emergency Operations Center and a diverse group of professionals setting policy on the Emergency Services Council. In fact, the Emergency Services Council met again this morning to address the current COVID-19 situation on the island. The good news to report today surrounds the low number of known COVID cases in the community and a high number of those that have been vaccinated against the virus. The Emergency Operations Center has reported 5 positive test results in the past 10 days, including today's announcement. These active cases are not hospitalized but remain in isolation. So we do still have the virus in town and throughout the state of Alaska. Therefore, we should continue to protect one another by wearing a mask, keeping a distance from one another, and wash those hands like a raccoon preparing for a meal. The latest vaccination statistics indicate nearly 40% of eligible Kodiak residents have received their first vaccination, while 27% have received the second dose.
Sorry, we just had a little technical difficulty. The Emergency Services Director is frozen in place right now.
Association, Kodiak Community Health Center, Kodiak Island Ambulatory Care Clinic, Safeway, and Walmart. So remember to pre-register at covidvax.alaska.gov or call one of the clinics offering the vaccine. Mass vaccination clinics have been held by Public Health, Dr. Kohler from KIACC, and Providence, with support by the Emergency Operations Center. These vaccination sites will continue, and there has been no shortage of vaccine for those that have registered. So if you are ready and comfortable receiving the vaccine, which claims to protect you from severe illness and is around 95% effective in preventing the virus, you should register. We have had no allergic reactions in Kodiak with the thousands of people that have already received the vaccine. The Johnson & Johnson vaccine will soon be available in town for those that are only available for one-time vaccination. And the Emergency Operations Center will soon be a point of contact once we have more information about that availability. For reference, the Emergency Operations Center number is 486-8970. The Emergency Operations Center continues to meet travelers at the Benny Benson Airport. We have no mandated travel restrictions, but we do ask travelers to take a COVID test before circulating in public. And testing continues to be available by CANA out at the airport. For more information about travel within Alaska and outside, visit www.alaskasafetravels.com. The schools will be returning to in-person classroom next week after a short break. So as a reminder, stay home if you're not feeling well and contact your individual school nurse. More and more Kodiak residents are feeling safer about going out in public, shopping, dining out, and just getting back to pre-pandemic activities. This has always been a goal, and over the past year or longer, we have collectively worked hard to achieve this goal. But let's remember, the virus is still around us, And in addition to the vaccine, masks are still recommended and effective in preventing the spread to our dedicated workers at the grocery store, our seafood plants, our clinics, our restaurants, teachers, and all others that serve the public. The community is still in the green risk level, so let's continue to keep this status so we can feel safe during high school graduation, Crab Festival, and other traditional gatherings. We will return in 2 weeks with another community COVID update. So remember to stay safe, and thank you for listening.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
Dr. Shanna Theobald of the Kodiak Island Ambulatory Care Clinic takes conspiracy theories surrounding vaccines seriously. She's encouraging people locally to get the COVID-19 vaccine, and she wants to address some of the conspiracy theories that she has heard head-on.
There are probably a few big ones going around, but two that I've heard commonly. One, that it can cause infertility, and two, that the United government might be injecting a microchip into people.
One of the more common theories is the vaccine causes infertility. She says this is outlandish.
This was from a theory that the spike protein of the coronavirus looks similar to a protein in the placenta called syncytin 1. And after creating antibodies to the spike protein, you know, that would be triggered by the vaccine, that your immune system would then later on attack the placental protein and interfere with pregnancy. To address this, when the virus infects you, it is putting all of its genetic material into your cell, into the compartment, that the machinery in your cells to make itself, to replicate itself. So your body, when you get infected with a virus, you're already seeing all of those same proteins anyway. And if your system is going to make an antibody to a protein that looks similar to something in the placenta, you know, say the spike protein, it's going to do that with the viral infection. And in this case, the vaccine only contains the spike protein. So you're really only mounting a pretty specific response to one particular protein of the coronavirus, rather than mounting all sorts of antibody responses to different parts of the coronavirus. So actually, with that theory in mind, it's a lot better to get the vaccine than to get the virus.
Effectively, for this to be true, the virus itself would also cause infertility in people who develop antibodies to successfully fight it off with or without the vaccine. The viral infection has no known impact on fertility. Another conspiracy theory is the microchip theory. Theobald says this one is self-explanatory.
I've heard the theory that, you know, this is the way we're going to get microchips in everybody. And just to address that, there is absolutely no plausible way that a microchip can be added into the vaccine. And anyone can come and see the vial, see the needles, the solution that the RNA is in, and then the saline solution that we reconstitute the vaccine for injection. We draw the liquids up through a very fine needle, mix them, and then inject them into the arm using an extremely fine needle. And right now, you know, the microchips that exist that I know of are in pets, and there are some small ones that people have opted to get. I don't know why. I would never do that. They're bigger than a grain of rice, and there's absolutely no way a microchip is the size to be injected through a needle the way the vaccine is administered.
Theobald went on to say that the vaccine itself, even with the minor side effects that some people experience, is still vastly preferable to the virus, especially when considering the chance that one develops a long-term illness. She says that people shouldn't come away with the impression that vaccines are so beneficial that side effects are blindly accepted as a necessary risk, and she cites the AstraZeneca vaccine controversy as an example.
So far, what we are seeing is there is no increase in deaths compared to the general population. There's no increase in, you know, bad outcomes compared to what we would expect for that given age group on any given day in that population. Another thing I just want to assure people, and the side effects from the vaccine are so much better compared to the side effects of the virus itself. The virus is extremely deadly and causes a lot of morbidity, which is like illness that kind of persists. Even if you recover from the virus, a lot of times people's systems are left with damage that causes long-term illness.
To date, an enormous amount of evidence suggests that COVID-19 vaccines are safe and effective, and in the opinion of Dr. Theobald, they are crucial as well. Alaskans and out-of-state workers might soon have a new place to get the COVID-19 vaccine, four of the state's busiest airports. Alaska Chief Medical Officer Dr. Ann Zink says she wants to make it as easy as possible for people to get vaccinated.
This is one additional place to be present to make it easy and convenient for people. And then, you know, there's tourism that comes in the summer. There's also a lot of industry and workers and people who are coming up here for everything from firefighting to oil to, you know, salmon and fishing.
The state health department is currently looking for a contractor that could help set up vaccine sites beyond the TSA security checks at airports in Anchorage, Fairbanks, Juneau, and Ketchikan. Travel in Alaska is expected to rise in May through October between seasonal workers and tourists, plus Alaskans coming and going. Zink says offering vaccines is a key part of the state's offensive strategy against the COVID-19 spread.
We all benefit from vaccination, so the more people that get vaccinated, the better.
The airport sites would offer a single-dose Johnson & Johnson vaccine to people arriving at their final destination or on a layover. Who qualifies will depend on how much vaccine is available. While the state doesn't yet have enough vaccine to offer to anyone who shows up in Alaska, Zink expects that eventually it will, and the airports could play a key role.
At some point, you know, we have to collectively all think about how we get vaccines out across not only the state, but across the country and across the world overall. And if this is another additional way to help people get vaccinated, then we can figure it out.
So far, about 40% of Alaskans aged 16 and up have gotten at least their first dose of the COVID-19 vaccine. Already, the state offers COVID-19 testing at several airports, and Zink says that will continue. The federal government held its ground yesterday against calls to roll back restrictions on cruise ship sailings. That's despite mounting pressure from the industry and advocates like Senator Lisa Murkowski. In Alaska, the rapidly approaching cruise season, a billion-dollar industry, is still at stake. KTOO's Claire Stremple has this report.
There are two major roadblocks when it comes to large cruise ships returning to Alaska waters. One of them is Canada's closure to large foreign ships. The other is the Federal Conditional Sailing Order, a set of rules laid down by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention aimed at curbing major COVID-19 outbreaks on cruise ships. It replaced the stricter no-sail order from March 2020, but has proved stringent enough to delay cruises so far. On Wednesday, a major cruise industry group called on the CDC to lift those rules. Cruise Lines International Association wants U.S. cruising to resume by early July. The group says accelerated vaccine rollouts in the U.S. and examples from Europe and Asia of outbreak-free limited cruising are reasons to open up the industry. Last week, Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski pushed the CDC to give a timeline for when Alaska businesses can expect cruising to resume. She said the state is moving fast on vaccinations and ready for tourists, but the guidance coming from CDC does not reflect that preparedness.
We've been struggling in trying to get the economy back on track when 60% of your tourists that come to the state of Alaska come by cruise ship. We've got a conditional sail order in place that's effectively a no-sail order.
But in an email to Tradewinds News, the CDC said its guidelines will remain in effect until November, that is, after the 2021 season. Before the pandemic, Alaska had some of the busiest cruise ports in the nation. Cruising contributed more than $1.2 billion in direct spending and more than 20,000 jobs, according to a Federal Maritime Commission report. But loosened CDC restrictions alone won't bring large cruise ships back to Alaska ports. There's still the issue of Canada's cruise ship ban. For KTOO, I'm Claire Strimple.
Alaska lawmakers are considering sending a message to the federal government, urging it to allow ships to bypass Canada on Alaska cruises this year. KRBD's Eric Snone has this report.
Earlier this year, Canadian officials extended the country's ban on large cruise ships in the country's waters. That put the 2021 Alaska cruise season in doubt because U.S. law doesn't allow the foreign-flagged cruise ships that typically sail the Inside Passage to run domestic routes.
The Alaska visitors industry, particularly cruise tourism, is the cornerstone of Southeast Alaska's economy. Prior to the pandemic, Alaska had over 2.2 million visitors in 2019. Cruise ships bring roughly half of the visitors to our state.
Ketchikan Representative Dan Ortez recently told the House Transportation Committee that after a devastating 2020 with no cruise visitors, another season without the big ships could do lasting damage to the state's economy.
While many businesses were able to hibernate for 2020, the threat of no or limited business in 2021 could do irreparable harm.
So he and other state lawmakers are pushing for a resolution that would ask Congress and the Biden administration to allow large cruise ships to bypass a Canadian stop. The measure would add the legislatures to a growing chorus of voices calling for federal action, but would not carry the force of law. Alaska's congressional delegation has introduced a bill that would allow ships to skip calls in Canada, but that bill hasn't gone anywhere yet. Federal maritime law, though, isn't the only thing standing in the way of a 2021 Alaska cruise season. Even if Congress or the Biden administration were to waive the 19th century law that requires a foreign stop, the Federal Centers for Disease Control would need to sign off before cruise ships can start sailing from U.S. waters again. Juneau Democratic Senator Jesse Keel has championed the resolution in the Senate, and he told the House Transportation Committee that the measure would not pressure the CDC to allow cruises to resume.
So, Mr. Chairman, SJR 9 simply asks that that be a decision that Americans can make, that the CDC can make about safety, but that it not be, and again, for a short period, that it not be a decision we are forced into because of Canada's action with regard to their ports and waters.
Big Lake Republican Kevin McCabe said he's generally in support of the measure, but he said he's concerned about setting a bad precedent by waiving laws that protect the domestic shipping industry.
I'm very nervous that we allow the camel's nose under our tent, so to speak, by allowing foreign vessels to operate point-to-point in the United States.
Provincial officials in British Columbia have expressed similar concerns. Canadian media reports that some are worried that if cruise ships bypass Canada this summer, they might not return next year. But the authority to open or close Canada's ports to cruise ships rests with Canada's federal government, not BC's. Alaska lawmakers from both parties emphasize that the request is for temporary relief, not a permanent change. Shannon Adamson of the International Organization of Masters, Mates, and Pilots stopped short of opposing the resolution outright, but she pointed out that the state owns its own vessels that meet both CDC and federal maritime law requirements, Alaska Marine Highway System ferries.
We should be utilizing AMHS vessels that are currently tied up in Ketchikan to boost tourism in Southeast Alaska and help our communities through a difficult time.
She suggested the state could use the Columbia, which is currently scheduled for an overhaul over the summer. State transportation spokesperson Sam Dapsovich threw cold water on that idea. He says the Marine Highway System doesn't have enough crew members to operate the Columbia this summer. And besides, he says, based on current reservations, the state doesn't see a need to add the Columbia to the summer schedule. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Eric Stone.
Once again, the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta has the highest COVID-19 case rate of any region in Alaska. According to the state data, the YK Delta has superseded the Mat-Su region's case rate as of Wednesday. The YK Delta's COVID rate count now averages 40 per 100,000 people over the past 2 weeks. The region has been in this position before. For 4 months, from October to February, the YK Delta had the highest rate in the state. Then the Mat-Su region's cases outpaced the Deltas, which were dropping as vaccinations rose. Cases hit a low point in early March, but then began rising again. Public health officials say the current outbreaks are contained to about 5 YK communities.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. It's a big year for herring fisheries, but still only one buyer. More after this.
Halibut and black cod buyers and sellers. Simplify your sales online from one location at the seafood auction. Visit seafoodauction.net.
It's a big year for Alaska's roe herring fisheries, but lackluster interest by both harvesters and buyers is an ongoing story. The fishery at Sitka Sound will take off any day after a two-year stall due to small fish and a weak market. The same fleet has a harvest of nearly 67 million pounds, but managers predict low participation and limited processing capacity. 10 or 15 boats could fish at Kodiak for one of its biggest fisheries for decades at nearly 16 million pounds. Togiak at Bristol Bay is Alaska's largest roe herring fishery this year with a whopping harvest of more than 85 million pounds. Last year, only three boats and one buyer showed up there. The reason? The herring market has tanked over two decades by a single buyer, Japan, where tastes and buying policies have changed. In the 1990s, buyers there paid Alaska fishermen over $1,000 a ton or more. And while product from Sitka today might fetch a few hundred dollars a ton, at Togiak last year it was just $75. Gunnar Knapp, a retired University of Alaska fisheries economist, made this comment to KDLG in Dillingham.
Maybe the most extreme example I'm aware of how a major Alaska industry could be dependent on an extremely specialized foreign market.
Herring is frozen and shipped to Japan, where the roe is extracted. The male fish have almost no value and are mostly ground into fish meal, sold as bait, or dumped. That's the fate of the female fish after their roe is taken. It's estimated that only 12% of Pacific herring is used for human consumption. A report by the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute estimates that if the dumped fish was instead turned into fillets, it would increase the first wholesale value by $11 million a year. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon, and welcome to your Island Messenger for Thursday. It is the 25th day of March, the year 2021. The sun rose today at 7:56. It will set again at 8:36, giving us 12 hours and 40 minutes of glorious daylight. That's a gain of 5 minutes compared to yesterday. Our record high for this date is 57, set in 1963, and our record low is 2 degrees, set in 1935, presently 45 degrees. Partly sunny skies. We're looking for a high near 42, so we blew right by that. Southwest wind to 10 miles per hour today. Partly cloudy skies tonight with a low around 31, west wind to 15. And for Friday, mostly sunny skies, high near 39, west wind to 15, gusting as high as 20. Looking at our local tides, we just had a high tide here on the east side at 12:13 p.m. at 8.1 feet, so our tide is going out. Our next low tide will be at 7 p.m. It'll be a minus 0.1 foot tide, followed by a high tide at 1:30 in the morning of 7.1 feet, and our low tide for tomorrow morning on the east side will be at 7 a.m. and be 2 feet. Over on the west side, you have a high tide coming up at 1:01 p.m. That will be a 16.3 foot tide, followed by a low tide at 7:31 p.m. of 0 feet. Your next high tide will be at 1:59 a.m., just about 2 in the morning, and be 16.8 feet. Your low tide for tomorrow morning on the west side will be at 7:46 a.m. and be 2.7 feet. Mariners, here's your synopsis for the North Gulf Coast, including Kodiak Island waters and Cook Inlet. A 110 millibar low near Hitchinbrook Island will remain nearly stationary through Saturday morning. A front will enter the western Gulf by Saturday morning. Your resulting weather, Marmot Island to Sitkanat, Kodiak's east side offshore. Small craft advisory through Friday. Southwest wind to 25 knots right now. Seas to 10 feet. For tomorrow, west wind to 25 knots and seas to 8 feet. Over in the Shelikof, small craft advisory through Friday as well. Southwest 25 right now, seas to 9 feet, subsiding to 6 feet this afternoon. For tomorrow, look for west winds to 25 knots, gusting to 40 knots out of western bays and passes. seas to 4 feet in the Shelikof. For inside waters, Chiniac and Marmot Bays, Chiniac Bay, southwest 10 right now, seas to 2 feet. For tomorrow, west wind to 10 knots, increasing to 15 knots tomorrow afternoon, seas to 2 feet. And up in Marmot Bay, southwest 15 right now, seas to 3 feet. For tomorrow, west wind to 20 knots and seas to 3 feet. The Kodiak City Council will be holding a regular meeting on Thursday. That would be today at 7:30 p.m. It's happening at the Kodiak Public Library's multi-purpose room. The meeting is open to the public and will be broadcast right here on KMXT at 100.1. For more information, meeting packets, and I believe a link to see the streamed version, go to the City of Kodiak website. For more information other than that, go to 486-8636 and talk to the clerk. Also tonight at 6:30 p.m. at the Bayside Fire Hall, the Borough Assembly will be having their work session. Among the agenda items will be the new community fire station discussion, a budget discussion, and they're going to talk about contracts with Jacobs Engineering for Kodiak Landfill Stage 3, also talking about amending, setting the new stipend amounts for Fire Protection Area Number 1, that's Bayside, also a resolution expressing support for disposal of land and buildings to the City of Kodiak for developing a fire station. Well, the Kodiak College Technology Center room is having another one of their terrific workshops. This one's outdoor repair and maintenance. That's happening April 9th. Starting April 9th, it's a two-day workshop and goes from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. This workshop covering theory with hands-on maintenance of two-stroke, four-stroke outboard engines of 25 horses and larger. Classroom instruction is organized by three major components of the outboard, the power head, the midsection, and the lower unit. Hands-on practice in the lab follows each section that is covered in the classroom. Topics include machinery of each component, compression tests, changing spark plugs, oil changes, troubleshooting, parts replacement, and a whole lot more. This class is for anyone who uses an outboard. Class fee is $225, and the workshop is appropriate for ages 14 and up. Contact Lorraine Stewart at 486-1209 for more information, or email her at lestewart@alaska.edu. The Fish and Wildlife Service is accepting proposals to conduct commercial sport fish guide services on the Uganic River drainage located within the Kodiak National Wildlife Refuge. The service will award special use permits to successful applicants through a competitive selection process. The permits allow the sport fish guide services in specific refuge use areas through December 31, 2026. Proposals must be mailed to the Kodiak National Wildlife Refuge at 1390 Buskin River Road, Kodiak, AK, by 4:30 p.m. April 15th. For more information, call 487-2600. The Kodiak Arts Council is thrilled to offer a free program for young artists age 4 to 8. It's called Cabin Fever Crafting. Free crafting kits are available in a tote outside the Gerald C. Wilson Auditorium every Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Each kit comes complete with everything that's required to make the craft, and each craft has detailed instruction videos to go along with. There's no need to sign up or do anything other than come to the auditorium and grab the free kit from the tote outside. Again, that's Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. outside the Gerald C. Wilson Auditorium. The companion video can be accessed at www.kodiakarts.org. For more information, call the Arts Council at 486-5291 or 942-5840. Another class happening April 30th is DC Electrical for Vessels. It's an introductory course, 12-hour workshop for all beginners, women and men, who want to learn basic theory and practices of direct current electricity aboard vessels. Practice crimping wires, assembling circuits, using multimeter, applying basic safety standards, and to read and draw an electrical diagram. Also to learn and use a power equation, plus more. If you own your own boat or wish you did, or even if you go fishing, this is the class for you. This is the workshop for you. No testing, just learning. It's appropriate for 14 and up. For questions, contact Lorraine Stewart at 486-1209. Clownfish Alaska 2021, hosted by the Kodiak Chamber of Commerce, will be March 30th through 31st. This year's trade show and fisheries forums will be virtual, yet very social and engaging. Registration and how-to information can be found at clownfishak.com, where you can also find more information about bringing your sea stories to Clownfish Alaska. Our stories pull the community together, and even though they can't wait to get you back on that Clownfish stage, in the spirit of Alaska fishing community resiliency, the virtual trade show and forum will be featuring pre-recorded stories during virtual receptions at 5 p.m. on the 30th and the 31st. To help them, you can capture and share a few of the many stories that make up the fabric of our rich maritime history by recording a 3 to 5 minute fish tale either onto your smartphone or your computer. And then, if recording with a phone, please hold it horizontally. And then just email these stories to Teresa Peterson. That's Teresa at akmarine.org, or Phil Lampron, phil.lampron@kodiakhealthcare.org. And those need to be done by tomorrow.
Domestic and sexual violence harms our collective humanity. These assaults devastate victims, hurt family and friends, and diminish the lives of perpetrators. Respect is a choice we make to respect ourselves and respect others. Join Kodiak Women's Resource and Crisis Center in a social media challenge to promote community wellness and raise awareness of the impact of domestic and sexual violence. To find out how to participate, find KWRCC on Facebook and help us show that Kodiak chooses respect.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 3 times a day. Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the midday report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.